This is John Florida's Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest today is Eric Funk. This is John Floridas. Welcome to Musician's Spotlight. Today we are very pleased to be speaking with Eric Funk. Welcome.
Thank you.
Great to have you on the program. Composer and conductor extraordinaire, Eric's compositional output is considerable to say the least. 9 symphonies, 4 operas, 6 ballet scores, 17 concertos. Not that we're counting or anything. several tone poems, a number of pieces for chamber ensembles, solo instruments, and vocal works. Listeners to public radio will have heard his work featured on Morning Edition and Performance Today. And he's also been featured on CBS Sunday Morning and in the New York Times. And, of course, is also the host of 11th and Grant with Eric Funk on Montana PBS. Not bad for a guy from Deer Lodge.
Pretty fun, huh?
Yeah, let's start there. Let's talk about Deer Lodge a little bit and that connection and just how Deer Lodge and the Deer Lodge environment in Montana, how that kind of formed you as a person and subsequently as a composer too.
Well, my parents were actually living in Lewistown at the time, but my mom was born in Deer Lodge and her parents were there. So when she was in the last bit of her pregnancy with me, she went home, which oftentimes people did in those days. Mm-hmm. And so I was born in Deer Lodge. Deer Lodge certainly became huge in my memory from my earliest ages, you know, all the way through probably my freshman or sophomore year in high school. That time of Montana was a time with no freeways. There weren't a lot of fences. There weren't a lot of power lines. It was a real open, almost unbordered world. So it was like living on the coast where you have the ocean on one side. It just, to a kid like me, it just went out forever, you know, and just trying to find high ground and get your bearings, you know, that was kind of the name of the game. I think it had an impact on the way that I write, because this land is huge and it's full of silence and subtlety. It's more like a country than a state, because you get over in certain parts of eastern Montana or northeastern, you get up on the Front Range, and the High Line where I went to school from eighth grade through my junior year. Down here, Bozeman, Missoula, the Sawtooth and the Bitterroot and Lolo Pass. And every one of those locations is very different topographically, and yet they share the common denominator of subtle light shifts and bigness. I think it was Wallace Stegner who said something about that Highline Milk River area. When you stand, you're like an exclamation point on the ground. And there's something, for example, in the concerto that I wrote for Phil Auberg to play with the Latvian National, I told him that the cue, which isn't anywhere in the music or in the notes, but I said, if you want a mindset for this piece, it's the naked man screams his aloneness into the night sky. And he just knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah.
Because, you know, John, yourself, living here, we are impacted by place. And when I go and record or have performances of my works, particularly in Europe or Eastern Europe or Russia, the common response that I get from people is, oh my God, it's so big. It's so slow. And there are these silences, and it's like, they want to know, doesn't it make you nervous?
I can understand that.
I mean, it's just so, I had a friend come out and visit me from back east, and the first time he came out, he couldn't sleep. He was just terrified of the silence. It was like the bad part of a Hitchcock movie where something was about to. Oh, wow. So the next time he came, he brought a CD with traffic noise, car alarms, gunshots, subway, and then he just slept like a baby.
Oh,
he was
my God,
just
so
peaceful to have the sounds of home. And for me, where, you know, as I was saying, people say, gosh, don't those silences make you nervous? I have more trouble going into heavy urban population, you know, where there's a lot of density, and it's just like, oh my gosh, there's so much going on.
Yeah, yeah.
It's harder for me in that environment. The bigness of Montana, of course, plays big on me. And when I do compose, I'm not like sitting at a piano with manuscript paper writing stuff out. More likely, the first process is me getting away from everybody, which is really easy in Montana. I'm like 12 minutes away from many trailheads. Getting off on a trail, breaking off on a game trail, bushwhacking off into places where very little trace of human beings have been. And that's where I can really listen to what's inside me in duet with what's out there. And that's really the formula for me. So it's common, you know, when if somebody calls and asks my wife, you know, is Eric there, she'll say, well, he's off composing. Well, can you interrupt him? Well, he's not here, he's out in the forest. So he's composing in the forest. I'm sure they think there's like a piano in the forest and there's this guy celestial streams of light coming from the sky.
Exactly.
Thank you.
This is John Floridus. You're listening to Musician Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Eric Funk. One piece in particular that I want to talk to you about, the violin alone, the concept of a single instrument being both the soloist and the orchestra accompaniment for a concerto. This is a pretty fascinating endeavor. Talk about this piece a little bit.
Well, it came to fruition because of the violinist for whom it was written, a Hungarian violinist who was here for the Mendelssohn Symposium. And during the time he was here, he did a solo recital. The recital was mainly violin works accompanied by piano. But in the recital, there were extended sections where the pianist would fall off and it was just solo violin. And as he was playing, I thought, oh my God, this guy, like we were just talking about with you and the guitar, was getting these sounds out of the instrument that were like orchestral. I mean, just such a color range. And I started, without very much having to lean into it, hearing timbral properties of flutes and oboes and clarinets and trumpet and French horn and bassoon and trombone or brass quartet and percussion and strings, and even the low end of his instrument sometimes sounded like more like a high cello than a low violin. And I thought, what is going on? So after he did the recital, I walked up and thanked him and I said, I'd like to write a piece for you. And he smiled and said, thank you. It was all very polite, you know, as those things are. And I said it would be a concerto for the violin alone, where you're playing the solo part and the orchestra part at the same time, which means you're going to have to emulate the sounds of the orchestra. And he smiled and said, I'd like to see this piece. And then he flew back to Budapest, and just a few days later, I mean, this thing came in like a locomotive, and you know, out of my head onto the paper. And I sent him three movement, 26 minute piece on two staves, where the top line is his solo part and the other one is all these notes, but it'll say French horn, oboe, clarinet, sometimes measure to measure. It's jumping. Huh. And then I went to Budapest back in, gosh, it must have been 2009, and worked with him for about 10 days, nonstop, nine-hour days, just figuring out, okay, this is what I want. How can we annotate this so other players besides you will know where to go from these normal seven places that you can bow? So the idea was, you know, he can't, it's a sinusoidal wave, so there's not much I can do about that, where the clarinet's a triangle wave and the oboe and bassoon are pulse waves. And but by his deep knowledge as concertmaster of the Hungarian Radio Orchestra, and for all the years he's been concertmaster, his job is to be the conduit with the conductor. He knows every player in the orchestra and what they sound like and what sound he wants from them. That's his job. And so for him, it was a marriage of his two worlds.
Eric, I wanted to go back to Vilmos. Is that, am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yes.
The gentleman who, for whom you wrote The Violin Alone, Vili describes his experience in playing that piece and what it brought out in him as a person. And just, I'm trying to remember the exact quote, but essentially it he felt that it just exhausted himself. He exhausted himself in playing this piece because he was expressing so much of himself. And my question to you is, what does it feel like as a composer to have brought out that kind of a performance in a musician?
Well, I was beside myself. You know, it's one of those things where I think when somebody realizes that which has only been in your mind's ear as exactly as he did, it's like that's the way it's supposed to be, but it never is. You know, it's very seldom that you get a definitive performance. My first teacher, Svoboda, said a good piece of music can survive any performance. And he was warning me for all of the breech bursts and forceps deliveries that were going to happen around premieres. But here was a premiere where he just destroyed everybody, including himself. He took himself down and everybody else with him. And so I was like inconsolable. I was like, people want to talk to you and you're just like, you know, you're like we were talking about earlier, you start to evaporate yourself a little bit. You can't tell where you stop and the world begins, sort of thing. And so you're trying to, I think we even have a phrase in English, trying to hold it together or put yourself back together, because it is shattering. You know, at the same time, it's like traveling to Europe. It opens you up to a much bigger perspective. And so when you have something like that happen, it's life altering.
Eric, do you sometimes feel a need to refresh or reboot? The way that you actually go to work, the way you described it earlier in the interview, was actually the way that a lot of people on a personal, spiritual level, intellectual level, that's the way they refresh or reboot. They go on a trip, you know, they go hiking on a trail. They seek solace in the wilderness to refresh. It sounds like a lot of times that's where you're going to do your work. So how do you, I guess is the first question, need to get away from that a little bit so that you don't become Icarus and get burned out? And if you do that, how do you do that? I know you go hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. Heavily armed hiking is what it really has turned out to be for the last number of years. It works both ways. You know, when I go out and I'm in that creative mode, as spent and torn to shreds as I am by the process of doing it, I'm also rejuvenated by doing it. So in a funny way, I get tired or not doing it. So going out into the forest, there's this, it's like swimming in energy. You know, there's all this extra stuff that comes in. I'm engaged in this process, but I'm also refueling it. I used to ask my students before I would take them on privately, what is it that you bring to music? So many people come to take. Why does music need you? And I think once you have an answer for that question, then you've created this relationship with this thing that you are, and it brings as much to you as it takes out. It just has a way of refurbishing you and blasting you to smithereens simultaneously. Hmm. It's like oxygen overload. I sleep a lot because people will say, my God, you do so many things. I mean, you're here, you're there, you're everywhere.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
And I need 10 to 12 hours. Hmm. I burn hot and fast when I'm going. Hmm. If I can't get 12 hours, I'll take a 2-hour nap. And then I work very fast. And very deeply, and it's gotten better as I've gotten older. I've really gotten good at going immediately into the process instead of having to go through a gradated descent into the sanctuary of the self. It's really just, I just walk through the door and bang, I'm on. It's refreshing, and I think there is something about, you're like plugging into an outlet of the universe, and you're getting recharged at the same time you're getting knocked around. Hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. There's a lot of different ways I could go with that. One of the things that's coming to mind, though, is just, you know, I guess just trying to think of other activities that you do, maybe just even hobbies. Like, and, you know, I kind of flippantly said hunting, but, you know, you're a Montana guy. You know, other stuff that you do that you can then come back to music, even though the process sounds like it in and of itself is refreshing.
Well, I oftentimes will go cross-country skiing you know, I'll hike high country and I won't engage. I won't throw that switch where I'm really just out there being in it and being able to move through it. The humorous side of that story is that generally I make an immediate and spontaneous decision to do it. So there are many people in this valley and around the state who have run into me on some hiking trail where I'm in a 3-piece suit or I'm hunting, you know, and I was out last week and I came home and my wife said, you were hunting, you're wearing a suit. And I said, yeah, but I changed my shoes and I had a tarp in the car. But the idea is you got to go when you got to go. And I know somebody saw me skiing off Leverage and I had my dogs and they see the dogs coming. So they know I'm coming and I'm coming down in an overcoat with a tie and a watch fob and they're going, they're just laughing as I have like a fedora. Mm. But it was the only time, and I knew that if I came home and changed clothes and got all the gear that I would just be exhausted. Mm. But just throwing the skis in the car and going, come on dogs, going that's skiing. That's, you know, so it's just about responding immediately because, you know, our lives get busy. So you have to steal the moments that are there to steal.
ericfunk.com is the name of Eric's website, E-R-I-C-F-U-N-K, Funk, like Sly and the Family Stone.
Yeah.
ericfunk.com. We've done a full interview. We haven't even touched on you as a jazz musician at all. So maybe we'll save that for another show.
I'd love
that. Maybe feature some of that work. But you can find out more about that side of Eric, in addition to his work as a composer. And you can find that at ericfunk.com. Thank you so much for taking time to let us into your home here and talk shop with us here on Musician Spotlight.
Thank you, John. My pleasure.
This is John Floridus. You've been listening to Musician Spotlight. Our guest today has been Eric Funk. If you'd like to contact us, you can send an email to the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org. And you can also find us online at our own website, musicianspotlight.org. And you can also find us on Facebook. Our program is now available as a downloadable podcast from those websites as well as from iTunes. Musician Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.